Thank you very much and good morning. Welcome to our interim statement after 9 months. Let's directly jump into the presentation. I'm looking at slide number 2 now. The slides are available as webcast. They are available on the website, so you should be able to download. Slide number 2, in a nutshell, overall Q3 came in as expected. Well, of course, the pipeline that we saw in Q2 was burdened by COVID and has given us some weakness. We see that on the revenue side, but beyond that, it is as expected. What is unchanged? Our teams are mainly working from home. I think we're back to 95-98% of people working from home due to the now again more restrictive lockdowns, etc., in the different countries. What is good news? September showed the overall strength we've been waiting for. So we have signals that the market, despite COVID, is getting back to normal. Now let's look at the slide. The total revenue increase after 9 months is 4%, and we see increase with our clients outside of the top 2 clients of 15%. We will come back to that. 38% revenue share with fast-growing technologies, and we have an EBT in the third quarter that is significantly above the second and even the first half of the year. Our outlook is confirmed on revenue and EBT basis. The insurance business rose strongly by 34%. It's now standing for 14% of our revenue. And the business with cloud solutions grew by 52%, which now stands for 8% of our total revenue. We had a strong operating cash flow after 9 months, driven by positive working capital effects. And our cash and cash equivalent position is also stronger than in the year before. Let's move forward to slide number 3, and this is a new slide we added to give you a bit more details about our revenue distribution. And let's do the blocks from left to right, one after the other. So first of all, we show the fast-growing technologies I already mentioned. They are on the rise. We give the technologies that we put in this category in the footnote. So this is mainly distributed ledger and blockchain. It is artificial intelligence, data analytics, cloud business, and DevOps. This now stands for 38% of our revenue, strong increase versus last year. Well, if you ask yourself, what is then reducing? It's the legacy business. It's the legacy business, partially that we have done with our top 2 clients, where we have done a lot of application management with old technologies. And this is being replaced in our revenues by the fast-growing technologies over time. Let's go to the middle block. This shows our client concentration. And we show it to you in a couple of clusters in line with size after 9 months. Well, the top 2 clients, which is Deutsche Bank and Barclays, they reduced from 30% to 22% of our total revenue after 9 months of this year. Then you see the clients in the group 7.5 to 30 million euros, which means on the yearly basis that will be 10 to 40 million euros. And they climbed from 21 to 27%. So we saw a strong increase with those clients. We saw an increase with the next block of 3.7 to 7.5 million euros from 12 to 15%. And the smaller clients have been stable compared to the year before. Of course, we want to grow clients in the area up to 1 million into the next clusters. So move them from right to left over time. Well, for sure, the left side is defined by the size of the client and his IT budget overall. If they can move to the 4 to 10 or maybe even to the 10 to 40 million cluster over time. That's the GFT strategy in land and expand with our clients. On the very right, the sector split. We show the banking business has been reducing slightly from 80 to 76%, while at the same time insurance business grew from 6 to 11 to 14%, and all the other clients, industry and others, are quite stable at roughly 10%. Moving forward, slide number 4, key figures. The revenue after 9 months stood at 327 million euros, as I stated, 4% up compared to a year ago. And if we take out the acquired company in Germany, which we acquired in 1st of January, the organic growth is 2 percentage points. The EBITDA adjusted is down 11%, and it is heavily burdened by underutilization and restructuring, as named in the bullet points on the right. And we see positive trends from our margins on the Americas and UK side. This anyway is a trend we will see later, that we have a quite a strong trend for our Americas, UK and APAC business, while continental Europe is more hit by COVID at GFT. If you add up all the bullet points on the right side, it is pretty much in line with the year before. If we would not have had the underutilization and the restructuring, we would even have overachieved the 2019 numbers. EBITDA is burdened by M&A effects of the NIN GmbH of roughly €1 million. And last but not least, the EBT margin is at 2.8%. I will come back to the tax ratio on a later slide. Moving forward, slide number 5, revenue and EBITDA adjusted by quarters. So here we look at the quarters, starting with revenues comparing to the last quarter, so Q3 versus Q2 of 2020. We do see a decline, and it is mainly COVID and summer holiday related. Q3 is always somewhat hit by lower working days because of holiday season, and this is also the case in 2020. That's why we are below Q2. On the earnings side, we are above because the second quarter included nearly €6 million of restructuring cost. When we compare to last year, we do see that revenues are above 2019 revenues despite all the COVID impacts. And on the EBITDA adjusted side, we're pretty close. If we take out the IFRS effect, we're nearly spot on last year's EBITDA adjusted number. I'll come back to IFRS 16 a bit later. Let's move to slide number 6, revenues by segment. Americas and UK, as I already said, quite a strong trend. You see the organic growth of 14%, no M&A, but also diluted by the FX effects. We do see the euro has strengthened to a lot of currencies on the planet, especially to the real in Brazil, to the Mexican peso, but also to the dollar. And all these three are part of this business segment, and that's why FX costs us 7% of growth on a euro basis. Looking at continental Europe, well, organic, we're plus minus zero, more or less compensating the losses from the top two clients with growth in other clients. At the same time, we have the M&A effect from the company we acquired in January, which contributes 2% of growth. Let's dig in one step deeper on slide number 7. It's the same view, the same business segments, but now we differentiate in the top two clients and the other clients. And focus on the top twos first. Well, as already seen on the slide before, the share of the top two clients has reduced to 22%. The reduction versus last year after 9 months is 24% of revenue. So we now see 72 million, which is a bit above what we had expected. We even have foreseen a slightly higher reduction with the top two clients. So they are a bit compensating. The not so strong growth in other clients, which is because of the COVID crisis. The other clients are growing by 15% after 9 months. Well, this number stood at 19% after 6 months, so we do see it a bit coming down, which is mainly because of the lack of ability and possibility to build pipeline, especially in the months of April, May, and June. Since then, as we always said, it's more or less back to normal, the new normal, don't meet, but anyway interact digitally or however. And therefore, we always said from September onwards, we see business coming back to normal, and this has happened. But nevertheless, after 9 months, top two clients have grown by 15%. You can see how it is in the two segments. It's a bit stronger in Americas and UK and a bit weaker in continental Europe. Moving forward, let's go to slide number 8. Also the business segment view, but this time on profitability. We look at EBITDA adjusted, EBITDA and EBT. Let me focus on EBITDA adjusted. The Americas and UK segment is above previous year's numbers. 1 million comes from better utilization, 2 million from better margins, from also growing business. So this is a strong number for our Americas and UK business. And this even includes that the real has weakened. So the translation of the Brazilian profits into euros is more burdened than it was a year ago. So this is even that is compensated. Continental Europe, we do see we're down compared to the first 9 months of 2019. We already talked about restructuring costs, which are more than 3 million higher than in the year before at the same time. And the underutilization, which is even 4.5 million higher than in the year before. So these 8 million special effects for Europe, they explain the gap to 2019, and they should heavily reduce or completely vanish in the year 21, a bit depending on how long COVID will take. But what we see today, we're quite optimistic. Moving forward, slide number 9, revenues by country. The four countries which show negatives are all impacted by our top two clients, mainly Deutsche Bank. So Spain, UK, Germany, and the US. Here the negatives only come from our top two clients. We do see Italy growing not as fast as we'd hoped. We'd hoped for nearly double the number, but that is COVID related. And we see a lot of markets growing quite strongly, which is Brazil, Canada, France, and Hong Kong. Those markets have seen, despite COVID, continuous trends towards clients continuing to invest on the IT side. So we've benefited there. So it's a mixed bag in the end. All right, let's move forward. Slide number 10, 30 biggest clients after 9 months in 2020. And the ones with the blue box were not there after 9 months of 2019. So they are compared to a year ago. And only one is new versus the second quarter, which is the bank on the bottom left in retail banking, WSIB, a Canadian bank, Ontario, right? A Canadian bank which made it to the list. So in Canada, we're not only growing the insurance business, which we strengthened nearly 2 years ago with an acquisition, and since then it's going strongly, but also we're winning banking clients with that same sales team. Positive news. I think the others have not changed significantly, so let's move forward. Slide number 11, P&L statement. A couple of comments here. The first one on cost of purchased services. We see the number is stable, so no change versus 2019. That's the third line from the top, cost of purchased services. This means relative to the growth we see in revenues, we are reducing our freelancers that we're using, and we're, of course, putting more emphasis on utilization of our own teams. That is clear. We do see the other operating income increased by nearly 3 million. I have to explain here that we have seen a lot of FX effects, positive and negative, which then in the saldo don't have a big impact, but they have blown up the other operating income. So it is 3 million of FX positive effects in there, but there's also roughly 3 million of negative effects in the other operating expenses. So if I take that out, operating income is only up by roughly 1.5 million euros, which is contributions from governments partially to short-time work, but partially also like in Quebec, Canada. It's just what the government pays on a regular basis. And on operating expenses, if you take out 1.5 million gap because of FX, you do see that the cost for operating expenses are below 2019. So cost-saving measures are working while the revenue is growing. The only number which is not in line yet is personnel expenses, which is up 8%. And here, of course, we do see the restructuring costs I was referring to and the underutilization. So this is the area where we want to improve significantly in 2021. One last comment on tax rate. Tax rate stands at 29%, and that's probably where it's going to end the year, 28 to 30%. We have a quite unfavorable profit distribution between our countries. We have countries with losses, like Germany with a high loss because of restructuring and others compensating, but having to pay taxes for the compensating profits. And therefore, we have an unfavorable distribution. We also believe this will get better in the year 21. Going to slide number 12, cash flow analysis. Well, overall, I think it's always important in these times to mention that financing structure remains very solid. The net cash is even better than it was at the beginning of the year or at the end of last year, which is usually quite a good moment for our net cash position, and we're better than that today already. So net cash is absolutely no issue, and at the same time, we do see strong operating cash flows, as you can see in the graph. Last but not least, investments. Here we do see the acquisition of the Inin GmbH in Germany, which we acquired in January with a cash out of roughly 6 million euros. Now, balance sheet. Usually I don't talk a lot about the balance sheet, but today I need to mention the changes you see in non-current assets. Our non-current assets reduced by roughly 10 million, mainly because we have used options to terminate office space where possible. So inside these current assets, the IFRS 16 assets are included. So the main effect comes from utilizing the option to terminate our London office, effective May 21. So far, we had planned to use the office for another 5 days, but due to COVID and expected lower work from office percentages in future, we chose to utilize the exceptional termination option we had in the contract. It's now a different way of looking at IFRS 16 for that office. We had been planning to do another 5 years, still after the Q2 numbers, and now we decided, no, we terminate and we go for a smaller office. And for sure, we will again rent an office. We're already searching. The new office in London will be smaller, potentially cheaper and a cheaper location, but it will, once signed, again trigger an IFRS 16 asset and liability. It will again grow a bit. And this is what I'm trying to say. IFRS 16 is a beast, right? And with potential further facility changes, IFRS 16 will be a challenging beast for the quarters to come. Until we have adapted to an average office rent volume that is adequate for the new post-COVID era. That's the right word, right? Era. Let's, as a number, today, before COVID, we had a work from inside a GFT office percentage of 70 to 75%. 10% were working from home and 10 to 15% on client site. We foresee for the future a number, and this is still quite broad, of 40 to 60%, maybe 50, maybe 40. So there will be a significant lower need for office space. And this lower need will come when contracts run out, when we can terminate. London was one of those options we were able to terminate. And this will continue for the next 2 to 3 years until we have settled on a level of office space per employee that is ready for the new era. So we will see IFRS 16 accounting being a challenge. We will be very transparent about it so we can all understand where it comes from. Okay, that was a bit more on balance sheet than usually. Let's move forward to slide 14, employees by country. Well, here it's easy, kind of the same pattern that we have seen already in Q2. We see Brazil and Poland growing, and at the same time, we see the decrease in Germany, mainly because of the restructuring, and we see Spain also slightly more stable and over time reducing. The utilization overall was in line with previous year. But when we look inside the utilization, we see that we had a very strong utilization in our Brazilian, Mexican, Canadian teams, while our European teams were struggling, especially in Germany and somewhat in Spain, we had a lower utilization, which led to the underutilization in euros I was mentioning on one of the first slides. And this is why 89% looks good, like in previous year, but it is not well distributed because our COVID-hit European markets had a harder time on this. Bringing us to the last slide, slide 15, the outlook for 2020. So overall, the outlook is unchanged, only we have that IFRS 16 fallout. But let me start with the revenue. 440 million stable revenue for the next year, for the year 2020. So this is what we have been predicting since a couple of months. We do foresee our top two clients reducing by 26%, while at the same time we're growing all other clients by 40% as before. Looking at earnings, looking at EBITDA adjusted first, you do see that we have reduced the EBITDA adjusted number from 44 to 42 million euros. The contribution from business is unchanged at 31 million euros. That's the gray part of the column. But the IFRS 16 positive impact, the depreciation that comes from IFRS 16, is reducing by 2 million because of the 10 million of IFRS assets that we have lost, mainly because we have terminated the London office. So it looks like a lower EBITDA, adjusted and EBITDA, but it is only referring to an office where we continue to pay rent until April 2021, and then that rent goes to zero, and we will rent back a smaller and cheaper office in the time after. So here, IFRS 16 might not give the right picture of what we're doing, and as this will continue, space will reduce. This IFRS 16 block might continue to melt over time, at least somewhat, maybe 20-30% more. Everything else on the profitability burdens from COVID with underutilization and restructuring was already given as an explanation, same as in the first half year, and we continue to spend on sales activities to have that growth in all other clients. We are doing everything to be prepared for 21 to be the breakout year we had hoped 2020 would be, with the top two clients, not hurting us so much anymore. And therefore, what we're doing is we're doing our homework to make 2021 the breakout we hope for it. Q4 has a good visibility. We will do an additional 1 million of restructure in the fourth quarter in our Spanish management team, which will have an immediate payback in the year 21, because these are managers which have mostly been working on the reducing revenues of our top two clients. But that's the only change we see. Therefore, still 13 million of EBT. That's the core number. That's stable. It's not IFRS 16 impacted. That number is unchanged. All right. That was the presentation. 25 minutes works. And then please, ready to take your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. Questions are only possible via telephone lines. And if you're connected via webcast, please switch to phone line if you wish to ask a question. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. One moment for the first question, please. The first question comes from the line of Andreas Wolf with Warburg Research. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good morning, everyone. It's Andreas Wolf, Warburg Research. A couple of questions from my side. So the first one would be on the business pipeline. How is it building up for the next year already? What's basically your gut feeling with regard to client projects, whether the difficult economic environment has impacted client budgets, or whether they're still willing to invest as in the past. So that would be interesting. The second question is on the sale of Deutsche Post IT to Tata, whether this has any implications for GFT. And the third question is on the home office topic that you've touched upon. So outside London, you might follow a similar strategy. Is it right to assume this? And if yes, what could be the overall positive margin impact that you might experience here going forward? Thank you.
First of all, good morning. Yes, thanks for the questions. Pipeline 2021. Well, that usually I would be better prepared to do that, but in the COVID times, with all that volatility, and we all know about potential vaccines now for roughly 3 days, right, or a bit more. Currently, the pipeline, we don't have the same visibility as we used to have, right, as in normal years. But we do foresee a positive trend that has emerged from September onwards. So we are optimistic about 2021. We believe our top two clients, we will see another small decline. Don't know the real numbers yet. We will get into that. But we see a strong trend for those new technologies all over the globe. So it is, be it in Europe, where this is picking up, and just take Deutsche Bank going for Google Cloud as one example. We see it in North America. We see it very strong in South America. And in Asia, we're building banks completely in the cloud for clients like Standard Chartered. So we have a positive trend, and therefore we're optimistic. And my gut feeling is optimism. Breakout year 2021 that we wanted to have in 20 will happen in 2021. The environment is somewhat not as stable as in usual years when I do that prediction. So there's a bit of a footnote. Well, hopefully the COVID trend doesn't burden us too much. And another one, hopefully there are not too many insolvencies giving banks big headaches in their credit portfolio. The second question, the sale of Deutsche Bank IT, we don't see any implications for us from that. Full stop. Very simple. And the third point, home office. Well, yeah, that's the million-dollar question. How much home office, how much office space, which is kind of the other side to look at it, will we need in future? We have office rental costs of roughly 10, 11 million euros. If we can reduce that by 30% midterm, that would be a good number. That's where we want to get. But again, if we could reduce it by 40%, even better. But we will see. And of course, this will take time because there are running contracts. You don't always have this favorable situation that you have an option which you could just choose and pick and utilize, and then the contract terminates. Of course, we have an office we just rented in 2019 for 5 years, where we now look back and say, sometimes you're lucky, sometimes not. So we have a mixed bag, of course, in our portfolio as well. But we will look at every office. We are looking already, and we will continue to look at every office, and we will continue to look at the work from office quota we need. Because there's one more element to this. Our clients who today accept work from home, because elsewise nobody would really be working on IT projects, how will they react in the quarters to come? Will they again, because of compliance and other audit issues, want us to be in closed blue rooms that have limited access rights, etc., which you can only do in your own GFT buildings? Therefore, it depends also on the client's reaction. If they continue with the approach they today accept, work from home is okay for IT projects, for banks, or will they go back to the situation we had before? Probably it's going to be a mix, right? Some want to come back, but a lot of them will stay as it is, and then we will adapt our office space accordingly. But this is a path where we still have some stuff to learn, also on our client, on the client's reactions. Hope that helps.
Thank you.
Welcome. Any more questions?
The next question comes from Knut Hinkel with Pareto Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. I have three. First of all, on IFRS 16, the effect. So my understanding is that if you will rent a new office space, so that will also then increase your EBITDA again in the next couple of years. So there will be up and downs. So the question would be, if doesn't make sense to focus on EBITDA still as a KPI, or maybe introduce EBIT as well, or look increasingly into EBIT. Wouldn't that make more sense? So that would be my first question. Second question on FX. You mentioned that you were hurt by a Latin American FX effect on the revenue line. So, but I guess that on the earnings line, that should be helpful here and there. And I would be interested to learn about the net effect, whether that that netted out on the earnings on the earnings line. And thirdly, you said at the beginning of the year, before in the before COVID-19 era, that 2020 wouldn't be a year of margin optimization, but of building a pipeline, building a business, and so on and so forth. My question would be if you would see the same scenario for 21. It's more about gaining volume, business volume, building our pipeline, and not so much about margin optimization in 21 as well. Thanks.
Thanks. Let me start with IFRS 16. Yes, you're right. Whenever we rent a new office, and of course it's a contract, usually not for 1 year, but for 5 years, if you want to have one in the London city, then the asset goes up again, and then the depreciation goes up again. And therefore, we are also looking into maybe focus more on the EBIT than the EBITDA. What we're doing, as you see on that outlook slide, is we're showing the EBITDA adjusted separated IFRS and operational EBITDA. I think that's at least the minimum we can do for the moment. So the number without IFRS 16 is comparable throughout the years. But looking at EBIT on top, maybe putting that more in the focus, maybe taking out the EBITDA number, is something we will look at. But as always, we do those changes always for a full business year, so that would maybe happen then in 21. On FX, on profits, well, that's not an easy one. We have FX effects overall of minus 440K, right? You see that on that slide number 4 where we put it in the bullet point. As I stated, in the Americas, the effects are a bit diverse. If you recalculate the profits from Brazil into euros, there is a negative effect versus previous year, because the real in average is 6-1 to the euro. It was 4.5-1 in 2019. So that's a major gap. At the same time, we deliver from Brazil into New York City, and there we sell in hard dollars. And the U.S. entity has some windfall profits coming from this FX effect for what they buy from Brazil, because they buy in real, and that makes the profits in the U.S. go up. So the overall effect is probably not that big, maybe $500,000 of profit we're missing because we don't show the translation effects on profitability. Last but not least, growth 2020, how does it reflect in 21? Yes, that's a good point. Saying 21 should be the breakout year 2020 should have been. There's one advantage coming out of 2020. We've done a lot of homework. So this means, yes, in 21 we will focus on growth, but we probably have a better margin potential going into 21 than we had going into 20, because we have done those restructurings, which, as always in life, right, have been, they have been, the spotlight has been put on those resources by COVID, but they were there already, right? It was already a not ideally utilized team that we were looking at, highly competent, but not for the skill set we need for the projects of tomorrow. And therefore, what we do see is that we have probably a better cost base going into 21 than we had going into 20. So it should be a bit of both. We focus on the growth, but the margins could be better than we had hoped for in 2020. But give me another quarter to really look into this, because so much moving pieces at the moment, including the pandemic, that doesn't make it easy to predict. I hope that helps.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks.
And ready to take more questions.
The next question comes from the line of Jan-Erik Schmidt with Lloyd AG. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the time for my question. I have a couple of questions. First off, regarding top two clients going into next year. So do you expect the decline to remain on the current level, or do you think it's going to decelerate and smooth out kind of percentage-wise for the top two clients? Maybe we get one.
Okay. Top two. Yeah, it's a bit early to call. As always, this is usually the budgets are discussed and what is possible for the next year now, until the end of the year. Our view on this is, first of all, it's good that the top two clients only stand for 22%. Even if we would see another 20% decline, the overall number becomes smaller and smaller. It is a bit unclear. Deutsche Bank is going to the cloud. How much of that will really materialize in 21? If we could reduce the speed of the decline. Therefore, we are a bit optimistic that the decline will slightly, in percentage, reduce, but it probably will still be something like 15-20% versus 2020.
Okay.
That's our today's estimate.
Okay, all right, thanks. And if we take the interest payments, you had like 1.7 million for the 9 months, and roughly 700 million of those is probably connected to IFRS 16, right? So the overall interest payments went down.
Correct, absolutely. You're right. I think we're quite transparent about IFRS 16 in the appendix. And the interest piece, which is purely calculated, right? The interest part of IFRS 16 is not cash flow relevant, only what is flowing out. And as we had an overall lower net debt, that's why the interest that we pay to our financing banks is somewhat lower than 2020.
Okay. And what kind of CapEx do you expect if you say, well, you're shifting around office spaces, so CapEx is going to go down, or...?
That would be logical, although main CapEx is linked to people, not so much to office, because it is the hardware that our people are using. That's the biggest part of our CapEx. We believe CapEx to continue to be in the area of 1.3 to 1.5% of revenues, so roughly 5 to 6 million per year. We have not adapted that number yet for reduced office space. Maybe that's something to look into on the learning curve that is ahead of us.
Okay, and then there's another like roughly 30 million for IFRS 16, which is now a little bit lower due to the reduced office space.
Correct, and that is a moving number, as I said, right? Because if we move, if we're able to give back, hand back, reduce office space over time, that 30 million number should also reduce. But this still has to be managed. And again, not in all our locations do we have special options to terminate. Usually it is a contract for a couple of years, and we can try to sublet, but that's probably what everybody will do in the next quarters. So maybe the market is not that big for subletting, but we will materialize whatever options we have.
Okay. And working capital-wise, is it fair to assume that it's going to remain on the current level of roughly below 20%?
Yes, we believe that's quite of a relevant number. We do see some markets where banks are behaving, let's call it like this, very, very politically correct. One of those is, for example, Italy, where we have a very strong cash position and working capital is on an all-time low. So maybe there's a bit of a comeback, especially when growth picks up on working capital, but only somewhat.
Okay, all right. And last question, if we you were talking about the utilization rate being uneven across the different countries. If we expect an even distribution of the utilization across the different countries, what kind of personnel cost ratio can we assume? I mean, the number has increased over the past years. That's due to more internal employees instead of using externals, right?
That's right, exactly. So when you compare, we always have to include the purchase services because this is like employees, it's capacity acquired. But from today's perspective, the 79% we saw in 2019 is the target to get back to 78, 79%. And we
Okay.
could even improve it from there.
Okay.
But
All right. Thank you so much then.
welcome. Do we have more questions?
The next question comes to line of Berenice Lacroix with Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. I have two questions, if I may. My first question relates to the insurance business. You reported a 34% revenue growth in 9 months. Could you provide us some details that explain such a high growth? And my second question is on your new niche or platform that you plan to launch in Vietnam. Could you give us some update on that? When do you plan to start the business there? What kind of clients do you target, and what is the size of the business that we can expect in the short term in terms of revenue and number of staff? Thank you.
Hi, Berenice. Well, first of all, let's start with insurance. When you look at the slide with the clients, it is quite well reflecting where we're growing, right? So it is clients in the markets that our former acquisition Vineo is supporting. So we see a lot of growth in Canada. And the topics behind are still Guidewire implementation. That is topic number one. And the second is core insurance system improvement, which is like what we do for our banking clients. When insurance companies don't want a standard product, they use their existing core insurance systems, but they need also a revirement because often quite old. And here we are used with some clients. So it is a mix of those two, with Guidewire being the main force for growth. And we see the 34% very positive, absolutely. So looking back, this acquisition we've done 2 years ago, and I think I always say it's a marathon if you do acquisitions, but after two laps in the stadium, we're doing pretty well with that acquisition, as it is already contributing far more revenues than on the day we integrated. So it is clients across the board, strong in Canada and Europe. These are the main markets: technologies, Guidewire, and core insurance systems. Vietnam, yeah, that's brand new. Today we do roughly 10 million of revenues in Asia. This was nearly 2 or 3 million in 2019 and nothing before. So we have gained business there. We have delivered into Asia so far from our European locations, from Poland, from Spain. We saw our clients say, "Hey guys, of course we understand resources who know banking and cloud at the same time in depth are scarce on the planet, but buying from Europe when you're an Asian bank is a bit strange to us. You need a local location over time." And we had been building a Vietnam partnership with a partner company who was giving us people, and we delivered partially from Vietnam already, and we learned very fast we have to do it by ourselves. And therefore, we created an entity, I think today with 15 employees there, plus 25 contractors with that partner, and we plan to be 75 people in Vietnam on our own payroll and still 25 contractors at the end of 2021. Sorry, today we are 15 in 2020, and we want to be 75 in 2021, each adding 25 contractors. This is to serve the Asian market, the growth that we see in the Asian market, for example, in Hong Kong, Singapore, and potentially in Australia. We have pipeline there. We have just gone live. I think I mentioned it last time. It's now really live with the Mox Bank, the Standard Chartered Digital Bank in Hong Kong, which you can look on the website. That's one of those banks who only have a digital license. They can't have a branch, only digital. And we built that bank based on the Google, on the Amazon Cloud. And now we're looking into more of those as there are more and more licenses for digital banks handed out across Asia. And then Vietnam is our, let's say, nearshore location to deliver more cheaper resources into those markets while we still deliver part of the complex architectural stuff from Europe. But this might shift over time. So Vietnam, the nearshore location for our Asian market for the years to come.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Are there more questions?
Yep, the next question is a follow-up from the line of Andreas Wolf with Warburg Research. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. A few follow-up questions, if I may. So the first one would be on banks moving to the cloud. I remember that in the past there were legal restrictions with regard to European banks moving to the cloud. Has this legal environment changed? Could you provide us some insight here? And if banks are moving to the cloud with their applications, do you also have to do a recoding of the respective applications? That would be interesting information. The second question is on your coders basically working more remotely. Does this also imply that you have to change the work, the way people are working, collaborating, investing more in collaboration software for coding and so on? Maybe you could provide us some insight, basically how you manage this remote working. I guess you had tools in the past, but maybe you could provide us some insight whether you need to adapt. Thank you.
All right, let's jump into that. Cloud, absolutely. Legal environment has improved, plus the banks now have found ways to interpret the environment that is okay with the governing central banks to implement public cloud. And that's why Deutsche is moving. For sure, they are moving first in UK, but they want to move overall. And usually when some of the big banks are moving, it becomes a major trend. The others look, what are they doing? And when they dare move, it's probably not, it's now safe to go down that route. And that's why we see more and more demand for this from our European clients. On applications and recoding, well, when we do business in the cloud, it's more like three levels. If the client doesn't want to do much but just get his code to the cloud, we call that lift and shift. That's a simple thing to do, and there is not much recoding needed. You build a new cloud environment. You try to turn off the data center the bank used to use. You move the data to the cloud. And then it just does what it used to do before. If you want to improve and use some of the advantages the cloud delivers, which is usually speed, because all those cloud providers are experts in database management, et cetera. Well, we know who's behind, right? Amazon, Google, Microsoft, they know how databases work. And therefore, their cloud software includes tools that support you, especially on speed and efficiency. And that would need some recoding. Then you can just, if you only lift and shift, you will not utilize those advantages. But if you do the recoding, re-architecturing, you can utilize those speed advantages. So it depends on the application and the client, what he really wants. Just lift and shift, or lift and shift and improve. And then there's a third layer, which is, I don't lift and shift and I don't improve. I build it from scratch in the cloud, which for sure is the most efficient and most for the future ready. But that is on top the most effort and therefore expensive. So three layers, and we do all three. All three are needed. When we build a bank in the cloud, like the Mox Bank in Hong Kong, that's level three. We had to build it in the cloud native with the best languages, coding languages that the cloud software supports. But in other clients, we sometimes only do one or two, lift and shift or lift and shift and improve. So that's the cloud business today. Coders work from home. Yes, we've been using collaboration tools all of the time, right? For sure, we are using, in our case, we're using Teams, like probably many do today, for the collaboration of everybody. But we have other collaboration tools as well. At the Atlassian suite, exactly. Well, you're probably looking for the company behind, right? Because they are stock listed too. The Atlassian suite is something we use heavily, especially on the coder side. But of course, having your people work from home is, from an HR perspective, also a challenge to keep the teams together, to keep bonding, to keep. When we did employee surveys in the past, it was always the team our people liked most, right? Of course, everything else was sometimes good, sometimes bad, but the team spirit, they enjoyed a lot in GFT. And we want to keep and need to keep that team spirit. And therefore, tools are one thing, but we also want to implement more and more HR process supporting that collaboration and the feeling of being a team. Which then again comes together with how many people work from home and from the office. Maybe the team has an office day a week. They always meet on Mondays in the office, and the next team meets on Tuesdays and the next team on Wednesdays, and the other days they work from home. So all this is still to be optimized, because currently the office is not used, right? It's all digital. And this in between, once it's safe to be out and in the offices again, we will work on, and probably more to report on in these calls.
Thank you.
Are there more questions?
Yep, the next question is a follow-up question from the line of Knut Hinkel with Pareto Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my follow-up question. There's a large newspaper article on the change of core bank system by Deutsche Upper Bank today in German Frankfurter, which raised for me the question, who is liable if such a project went really wrong? Is it the IT service provider, or is it excluded by contract, or how is it done? So what's the legal side of your business? So maybe you can share some color on that.
Yeah, of course. And I'm really sorry. I have to give a legal answer. It depends. because it's down to the contracts. Maybe you remember, or others remember, we used to do a similar project. ApoBank is on Avaloq software basis, right? The Avaloq company being the competitor to Temenos in Switzerland, trying to go to Germany. We worked on the BHF program, and there the risk was with Avaloq. They took the full risk of the program, and we had our subcontracts with Avaloq as IT service provider, having a limited risk on the overall potential failure. And in the end, the biggest problem is, in this case, BHF Bank was sold to Oddo Bank, and they decided we don't want that anymore. And this is always bad for a project ongoing if the client changes his mind and is not really anymore in need of such a program. In Apo Bank, I don't know the contracts, right, and how it works, but usually if it is a big core banking system provider, the biggest part of the liability is with them. And then it depends how they pushed it to their IT service providers. I do not know in this case, because we only have been contributing some people on a day-by-day basis. Therefore, we don't have any delivery risk on our bank.
Okay, thanks.
Well, maybe I dare ask again, more questions?
For any further questions, please press star followed by one at this time. At this time, there are no further questions. I hand back to Jochen Reutz for closing comments.
Thank you very much. Thanks for joining today. Last quarterly call of this year, right? The Q4 numbers will be late February, early March. Maybe with some of you, we meet at the Eigenkapital Forum, at least again digitally, or at another conference. Looking forward to that. Stay safe in the winter period, and hope to hear you all soon. Bye-bye.